thank you for listening to this Belly Up Sports Podcast Network product. Some said we go belly up, so we made it our name, and we're still here.
What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam, is out of the loop, Kalal, and we are Atlanta's own. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports with wacky-ass hijinks and analysis presented by Belly Up Sports. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Graham, going very well. Got ourselves a nice little Friday night podcast here.
Right.
I've got my Atlanta Thrashers shirt on, you know, just to be current and up to speed with what we got going on.
I got my Atlanta Braves 2021 World Series shirt to be actually current with what's going on.
Yeah, it's a little more recent. But yeah, man, everything's going well. Did we talk last week?
Yes.
Postmasters?
No.
Oh, we did it before that, right?
We did it before we did it earlier in the week.
Yeah, so I went to the Masters last week.
Oh, yeah, I didn't really talk to you about that. How was it? I was so preoccupied with our band show that was supposed to happen, and then it got canceled by a fucking tree coming down and almost killing everybody in Smith's Old Bar.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
That's for the music podcast.
That's for the music podcast that doesn't exist.
The Masters is unbelievable. Like, I have such an appreciation for that event after going to it that I didn't really think I would get. But it's like, you know, for those of you who don't know my history, I, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I worked with the PGA of America helping to set up tournaments. So I kind of like have seen.
And you set up major tournaments too. You set up like the Open.
Yeah, the PGA Championship, yeah. Ryder Cup. But like it took me for a while at the Masters to like fully take in what I was seeing. And just like they do everything so unbelievably well. It's like, you know, as soon as you get there, you know, I'm a parking guy. The parking operation's unbelievable. They bought like all these homes around Augusta National, they bought up. It's just well manicured parking that they use 1 week out of the year. And like,
you should see if you could fold them into your new business operation.
That would be a big get. But they, you know, they've got people out there picking up trash at 9 a.m. in the morning on the first day of the tournament.
Hot
just
damn.
To make sure there's nothing there. We go in, and this was the day it was rain delayed, and we go to pick up a tee time sheet, and I'm like, surely this isn't going to be up to date because like they just released the tee time like an hour and a half ago because like of the new start time. Everything's completely up to date already.
Sure.
So I was impressed.
Is like, the food still cheap?
I'll get there, Graham.
All right.
Next thing, bathrooms. So this is something I noticed like from working other golf tournaments. They don't have porta johns there.
No, they don't.
It's all permanent bathrooms. They've got people holding signs saying gentlemen's restroom this way, and they get you in and out. Like they've got people inside direct into urinals, stalls, moving in and out. It's unbelievable.
I'm so surprised you saw that. I thought you'd be in the ladies' room. So in all seriousness though, amazing bathrooms, clean, pristine. No piss everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Maybe it's also, I think also if you're taking, and I've been in the Masters too, but in the practice round, but you know, when you take I never took a dump there, but when I urinated, it was like, you have to have respect for the Masters. It's like, there's a big pressure you feel on your shoulders when you're pissing at the Masters, because you don't want to, that's history there. Yeah. You're not just going to some bar, you're at Augusta National.
Well, we felt so much pressure because this was my dad I was with, and he got these tickets from someone at his church, and like the only way to really get tickets unless you win the lottery, like there is like a Masters lottery, is basically have them passed down. So like these tickets that we had were like from this church member's friend from like the 60s, like her mom, like his mom had it like in the 60s, and they right. just held on to them every single year. But like we were told ahead of time, basically, you know that like they take badges if like there's any misbehavior.
If you act out.
Yeah.
It would not be a place for me to go.
No, you could not do it.
Well, but the thing is, I'm not very passionate about golf. So even like I got in trouble actually when I did go. I told that story a few podcasts ago. Yeah. But for falling asleep. at hole like 15 or something.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that. And the real tournament's starting.
Yeah. So like the whole day we were just like on edge and like making a list of all the different random things that we could possibly do to get these badges taken away. But could you imagine that conversation to go to someone who's had these Masters badges in their family for like 50 years and be like, yeah, I'm sorry. I saw Phil Mickelson like 10 feet in front of me. This was one of my dad's. He was like wearing his watch on his left hand despite being a lefty, and my dad wanted to question why he didn't wear it on the other hand.
That sounds like a very Larry David scenario. That's hilarious.
Gets the badge taken.
I like how it has nothing to do with like cursing or being public drunkenness. It's like an innocuous comment like that.
So that's hilarious. Because of this badge rule, like the things you hear about Masters crowds are just different. It's true. It's like they don't have to have the people holding, you know, quiet y'all signs up or anything like that. People just like respect the game. There was one of my favorite moments was a guy hit a ball. This was 11, I think. 11 or 12 going into Amen Corner. And we were in the fairway and a guy hits a ball like over the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes probably like 3 to 5 minutes for the golfer to actually get to the ball. And like in that time, like, so we're standing like right there. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to be like right where he hits the shot. And like the volunteers are working like with the security to like get everyone like in proper alignment. They've got someone further up the fairway being like, is that branch in play?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Okay, everyone step back like 5 more feet and everyone just listens. And then by the time like it was Tony Finau was the golfer, he like strolls up.
He's still alive.
He's a young guy.
No.
Yeah.
Who am I thinking? Whatever. Anyway, it's irrelevant.
You're probably thinking of like Tony Siragusa.
Tony Siragusa is dead. Okay. He's a defensive lineman.
Sorry. So by the time Tony Finau shows up, they're just like, is that good? And he just like gives a quick head nod and they're like, hell yeah. But it was just like such a smooth, like the way they did that was just really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the concessions are, it's like all, everything's already made. You walk through, you pick it up. They're like, if you're getting drinks, it's all poured for you. You just pick it up and go.
It's moderately priced as well.
Yeah, it is cheap. They don't do sponsorships. So like,
so no super pretzel.
No. So like but the whole place, it's like, you know, they give the rights to broadcast, the tournament. They give that away to CBS
mm-hmm.
where normally like, you know, they would sell it for like $200 million or something crazy. But because they do that, they have full control over the broadcast. And like they're saying, no, we're not doing any sponsorship. So instead of like being Coke, Diet Coke, it's just labeled like Cola, Diet Cola, light beer. You know, like
what about for your damn screwdrivers?
They had, no liquor drinks.
They
had white wine.
Ugh.
You would be drinking white wine. I'm sure like some, you know, some fancy bars in the cabin you can get yourself sure. a liquor drink, but
one day.
But that was really cool. The no cell phone policy is awesome.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah,
that wasn't a thing when I went,
because you went for a practice round.
I went for a practice round. It was also before smartphones existed.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like, you know, people don't even think, because if you take your phone in, could get your badge taken. So like everyone's just like watching golf.
You put in a pouch.
I think they have that option, but everyone just leaves it in the car. Obviously, there's plenty of signs in the in the immaculate parking lot saying, leave your phone in your car.
Right.
So, you know, it's certainly striking up conversations with strangers a lot more. When we ate, it was like a high boy table, and like my dad walks up to like another like father-son, and he's like, mind if we join you? And they're like, sure. You talk to them, small talk for like a few minutes. They leave. Another father son walks up to us. Mind if we join you? Sure. Talk
just kept
with them.
Going and going and then going.
Like once we left, we heard someone else do a mind if we join you. And the guy was like, oh, no, sorry. Like we've got a few more coming.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But like, no hospitality tents, nothing like that.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. You got to go though. I mean,
it's just so,
it's so pretty.
It's just, and like when you're there, it's just so quiet.
Like
you forget. It's like, you know, the biggest golf tournament in the world.
Yeah.
You just see like a bunch of guys playing golf and like all like the people that fly in on the jets, mm-hmm. they're just there walking the course with you. They're not in their suites or anything. It's really cool how they do it.
What did you think about Amen Corner? You got to see that, I would assume.
Too crowded. Yeah.
That's the most popular thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
do you guys park at a specific hole and just watch people or do you follow somebody?
The best spot was our first spot. We like the second hole, it's a par 5.
Ooh, yeah.
And we're
in the green or in the fairway?
We ended up a little short of the green.
Okay.
So there's like a bunker. So like balls are landing like they're either going for it or they're laying up like right where we were. So like when I say Phil Mickelson was like 10 feet in front of us, he was 10 feet,
literally 10 feet in front of us
chipping. Yeah. So we just saw all these different golfers like playing a similar chip shot. And I don't know. I like the excitement of like, is that ball going to come hit me?
Right.
I don't know.
I think that's the exciting thing about going. I haven't gone to a golf tournament in so long, but I went to a few when I was younger. And the coolest part about it is like you get spoiled watching golf on TV or if you play the Tiger Woods PGA Tour games where it's like, you know where the ball is all the time. The camera works perfect. You know, you got an idea. But when you're there, you're like, you really got to pay attention.
Yeah.
You got to be locked in.
Yeah.
To really appreciate what's happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a great spot. But, you know, it was like our first spot. So we're like, oh, we got to go see more of the course. And we ended up on, was that 12 or 13, the par 5 on Amen Corner. Mm-hmm. And the fairway, which was like, but you're kind of like in the woods. So that was an okay spot, but then like we went up to the 11 tee box, which is a ridiculously tough hole, and like from there we were just like right next to like all the big groups coming through,
right.
Which was fun. And then like we sat in the bleachers to watch Tiger
come about through. To ask, did you see, of course you had to see Tiger.
So that was our last thing. He teed off later in the day and we just sat there and waited for him to come through.
He's still a physical specimen. I saw him in his prime at it was the Open Championship a while ago. Can't remember what year that was, but even now, it's amazing he's doing what he's doing.
I mean, he looked old walking around.
Sure, but he's still like he's got that swagger. Yeah. He's still got the Tiger swagger going on, even though he's definitely aged and he's had a million back surgeries. But you feel the history every time you look at Tiger.
Yeah, for sure. So once again, pretty cool that you know this is Atlanta sports adjacent, anyways. That you know, it was just 2 hours down I-20 to the biggest golf tournament in the world.
Yeah, I-20 East to Augusta.
There we go. So, yeah, no, it was really cool. And I was just like, okay, I'm hooked on the Masters this year. So, like, I by far watched the most I have in quite some time. So
Did you feel the need to go play real golf?
Or not really.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if it was there.
They say that the weekend after the Masters is like the busiest weekend of the year for golf courses all over the country because everyone loves watching the Masters and like, oh, I want to go play golf now. Even like the people that don't play a lot of golf are like, yeah, I got to go at least get nine. Well,
you know what? Frog Rock disc golf course was pretty crowded on Sunday, so maybe it works for disc golf as
maybe
well.
Maybe it worked. Yeah. I mean, you just want to get out there.
Yeah.
There's something, and I'm not a big golf fan in particular. I used to follow it more when I was younger, but there is something about not even necessarily watching it, but when you are playing, well, I would say it applies to when you're watching it too, but there's something like when there's a really great shot, you just get wrapped up in it, man. I don't know what it is. It could be anybody. It could be Tiger. It could be someone you never heard of, but when someone makes a really great shot, it's one of the hardest things to do in the world to hit a golf ball, I think. And from a sports standpoint, like it is difficult as shit. And when someone, you know, does something that seems so easy, but in actuality is not. There's some feeling that's indescribable about either hitting a great golf shot or watching a great golf shot. You're like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah. It was pretty funny watching because they do make it look so easy. So like as we're setting up like to watch this Tony Finau shot and it's like 100% a very difficult shot. Like he had to like stay low below these trees, hook it to the right. There's a lake on the left there, like ridiculously hard shot with all these people within like 5 feet of you watching you. There's this like old man that's next to us, this old redneck who's just like,
oh man, that shot ain't hard at all. You just got to get it up there and just like, you know, we thought it might have been Phil's ball, so he's like, Phil's got a little hook shot in him. He can make that happen.
Ain't
no problem.
Hard at all.
It's like, oh, okay, old man.
Yeah.
But yeah, they make it look so easy, but it's just so difficult. So yeah, no, it's a good time, Graham.
Good.
If you ever get the chance, somehow get hands on tickets.
Yeah, I'd go again.
You got to do it. Like they had freaking courtesy phones. So they don't allow phones in, but they have like banks of like phones set up.
Like if you need to make a call.
So like
well, how does that work? Is that as a wired phone?
Yeah. Old school.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I saw it. I was like, I have to. So like I called Veronica at like 3
Hello,
p.m.
Girl. I'm calling you from the master's phone.
Yeah. Which like you got to think like you get a, you see a, your call coming in from Augusta, Georgia. Like your first thought is probably hospital or jail, you know.
Or Katie Anderson.
Yeah, that's not really relevant to our users, Graham.
It's not, but
and you, you would have her number saved, most likely.
Sure.
A random number is what I'm referencing
right.
here.
Yeah, that's sure. Point. Yeah.
But yeah, I just left a voicemail. I'm calling from the courtesy phone near the 18th hall at Augusta National. We have maybe an hour, maybe two. I don't know. You just lose track of time there.
That's so cool, too, with the phones being gone, particularly in this day and age when, as we all know, the phones dominate our lives, and to be away from them for a whole day must be very freeing.
It was, and, you catch yourself, in, a moment of quiet, just, reaching for your phone in your pocket, and it's like, oh, no.
Oh, I don't need that.
I'll look at this grass, I guess.
Right.
So.
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's your Masters update.
Masters
man.
Update.
We didn't talk about the actual golf. Scottie Scheffler won.
Sure.
He's a beast.
He is a beast.
His wife was very pregnant, about to give birth, and he claimed that he was going to withdraw from the Masters, even if, it was the fourth round, and she was starting to give birth. We'll see. I mean, obviously, we won't see.
We won't see. He won.
It's interesting.
Fine.
Yeah, it worked out, but that was a good storyline.
Sure. You think you got to time that out, Bo, if you're a golfer, not to fuck around with Augusta National for potential
delivery.
Well,
I do think it was a couple weeks early, but that's still a little too close for Augusta.
Indeed. Never know what could happen.
Yep.
All right, Adam, to more depressing news. The Hawks are finally done. It's the last time we got to talk about them for a while.
Thank the Lord.
Thank the Lord. They lose 131 to 116.
Trey and his beard was not the magic trick.
Yeah, Trey's beard was disgusting. He looked like a vagrant or something. I was like, what are you doing? And the whole game sucked, and Trey really sucked this game. Even though he still finished with 22 points and 10 assists, he had 6 turnovers. He was his plus-minus rating was minus 27. His passing overall was abhorrent, and his defense was porous. There were so many passes just out of bounds to no one, and his defense just sucked the whole time. And I think the end of the first half encapsulated everything that was going on with Trae Young. Did a stupid behind the back pass to DeJounte with 2.5 seconds left, and it was off target, and DeJounte's got to couldn't even get a shot off to end the half. And then the play before that, he goes for a steal that leads to an easy basket for Chicago. And it was just kind of like that the whole game. The Hawks tried. They would go down big. They'd go on their own run, and then they go down. They would get them 4 or 5 points and then go down by 12. 4 or 5 points, go down by 15. 4 or 5 points, go down by 18. And the funniest thing to me was when Trey goes out of the game after he's playing absolute dog shit.
In the second quarter.
And he... it goes out, and then the Hawks go on this 12-0 run or something. And
DeJounte's
just
out.
Running point, looks perfect. Everybody's playing defense really hard. And then when Trey comes back, it's just discombobulation, no chemistry, no flow. I don't know why Trey came back this year. He was clearly hamstrung by that pinky injury. Only shot 4 of 12 from the field. It was an ugly-ass game. And
did we win any games I know Trey played the last 3 or 4.
We lost 6 in a row going into this game. And some of that was Quinn resting some starters.
Right.
But I don't think we won. Yeah, I think we lost 7 in a row to end the year, including this game, something like that.
So, yeah, and that end of the first half you were referencing, DeJounte was pissed.
Oh, yeah, he was very mad.
I saw that. He was upset at Trey.
And DeJounte like, played his ass off.
This was his team. This was DeJounte's team at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then, like, kind of like we thought, Trey came back and, like, threw it back out of loop.
Nothing coalesces with Trey and DeJounte on the court. You got to get rid of one of them.
Trey.
And all the people that are saying, though, you know, fuck Trey Young and trade Trey Young is ridiculous to me. I'm not saying trade Trey Young is ridiculous, but I'm just saying the sort of animosity towards Trey after everything he's done for this franchise overall. Let's think about it for a second on a whole picture standpoint as opposed to one game, even though he sucked ass this
game. Look at you, Mr. Small Sample Size, looking at the full picture.
Yeah, look at the full picture. Overall, Trey has taken the Hawks farther than any team in the history of the franchise. Yes, the 2014-2015 team also went to the Eastern Conference Finals, but Trey's team won two games. He also dropped 50 points in an Eastern Conference Finals game. He's won in the playoffs. He is a proficient offensive player. I don't think anybody can deny that. He's a great distributor. He's a great scorer. So he has a lot of admirable qualities, you know, and many teams would be lucky to have Trey Young on their team. However, you gotta make a decision here in terms of who you want to keep. And every, you know, this team, as it's currently constructed, plays better with DeJounte, but this team is currently, you know, running the point and Trey not being in the, you know, Trey not being there, in my opinion. But this team is currently constructed cannot even think about contending for an NBA title. So you have to think about what will get us there. And if it means blowing up the team, then so be it, because I can't, this is three straight years of going to the play-in tournament. And this is the first year of going in the play-in tournament that we did not get into the actual postseason. So if you think about it from where we were with Trey in the 2021 Eastern Conference Finals run, this team has progressively gotten worse. And that's not all on him. That's more on the front office. But you are trending downward in a horrific fashion right now.
I think that's a fair point, Graham. Actually, that's an excellent point that you're making. Very well thought out and constructed. Proud of you, Graham. That was good. That, yes, like, just because DeJounte looks better with this team does not make him, like, the better long-term fit.
No,
is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, you just have to pick a guy. Yeah, exactly. You have to pick a guy and say, how do we put pieces around either Trey or DeJounte in order to try to win a championship? And it might not happen in a year, but they're both young and they're both really good players, but it's different styles. I would say DeJounte's a much better rebounder, and the team plays better defense, whereas Trey, I would say, is a better passer.
But if you put a bunch of dogs around Trey, like the team that got to the Eastern Conference Finals, you can hide his defense more.
You can, but even that team was an offensive onslaught kind of team. You had some dogs like Solomon Hill and things like that, but it wasn't like, and Lou Williams. It wasn't like full-on dog, you know, where it's like we're really shutting down people defensively. I mean, Philly should have won that Eastern Conference semifinal. They just Ben Simmons themselves to death. So it was a really sad end to a terrible season. Clint Capella had a great game, 22-17. Had some great hook shots.
Well, DeAndre was terrible, wasn't he?
DeAndre. Holy Christ. So I never want to see him again. Ever. In a Hawks uniform. I am so done with him. Listen to this stat line. Like, he didn't score until the third quarter. And I kept talking to Alexa. I was like, I don't think he's fucking scored. And he got an and one, and then barely on the free throw, he like hit the bottom of the rim. It was just a terrible free throw attempt. He played 42 minutes, 3 of 16 from the field, 0 of 7 from 3-point, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, 8 points, a plus-minus rating of negative 16.
And we lost by how many?
We lost by whatever 131 minus 116 is. So like 14-ish points.
14?
That's really hard to do that math for some reason. Let's see. 26 is 10.
Yeah.
So 15. We lost by 15.
And he was minus 16?
He was minus 16.
What's that tell you, Graham?
He's the difference.
Yeah.
Well, he also played horrible defense. And it was funny, DeJounte today in the exit interviews, they were asking him, like, you know, what happened to the Bulls? Like, can you talk more about the Bulls game? And he said, well, what was, like, the game plan going on defense? And he's like, coach said to double DeMar. And that sort of let other people go off on us at the end of the day. I'm paraphrasing. That's pretty much what he said. So, you know, Coby White, for example, the old Carolina point guard who I love to death, had the game of his life, 42 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. And the Hawks did not, under any circumstance, pivot to contain that. They just kept trying to double DeMar, and they, you know, DeMar still had a great game. 9 assists, 6 rebounds, 22 points, plus minus rating of plus 27. So didn't really do anything. And the defensive effort was really frustrating. Plenty of times guys were out of position trying to do this double team on DeMar, and it led to easy baskets for everyone. And you can't, with this Hawks team, try to say, we're going to double a guy, especially when Trae Young's in the game. He's a defensive liability on his own.
Did you see the video that was circulating on the Twitter this week about it was DeAndre Hunter's like preseason interview, and someone's like, so like, what did you work on throughout the offseason? Like, you know, ball handling, this and that, blah, blah, blah.
Probably his stock investments.
And he just like stares at the camera. He's like, oh, nothing.
This is real?
I didn't work on anything. Yeah, he said that.
Oh, it shows DeAndre.
Well, he had a good season.
He didn't. He had a good, like, month and a half.
Oh, okay.
Like, he was injured a lot of the year. Yeah. That was another thing about this team is, like, majority of the year, you did not have your starting five together.
Yeah, if we have Jalen Johnson
is a different game. I mean, we went up to Chicago.
Okongwu.
But even, like, 3 weeks ago or so, we went up to Chicago with Jalen, with DeJounte, and we kicked Chicago's ass in Chicago. It wasn't even a game. We won by, like, 13 points, and we were in control the whole game. This is the exact inverse of that, whereas like the Bulls were in total control of the game. Every time the Hawks started to come back, you still felt like, even when they were going on like a 12-0 run, the Bulls were in control. And there's no reason Trae Young should have played in this game. I don't know why they were like, yeah, Trae, come back for the last four games. Like, there's no reason. He was so ineffective.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yep. And I think we kind of called that a few weeks ago. It'd be better to just shelve him. But, Graham, I do have to reference the new segment from last week, April 9th, 20. Well, I wrote 2023.
It was 2024. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that it's a new year.
I'm still doing that. Like, obviously this week as well. Graham, not concerned about play-in tournament.
Not concerned. Yeah, I was really excited about the play-in tournament because I thought we'd actually do something, and then Trae came back, and I was like, oh god.
So we'll mark that one as
loss.
Graham wrong. The other one was Chris Sale. Graham hates him.
No. Do not hate Chris Sale. I just don't think he's a viable answer in terms of free agent pitchers that we could have got. Or not free agent pitchers, but even trades that we could have gotten to really bolster this rotation. He's a nice piece. He's not a Glasnow. He's not a Snell.
This was trending in a better direction for me making fun of you, but he's now given up 3 runs and 5 1/3 inning.
Oh, tonight against the Rangers. Yeah. I mean, the Rangers are a good offense. And you're not going to be perfect every game. And Sale's fine. Like, he's fine. He's just not, he's not the Chris Sale of 5 years ago. And he was not expected to be. Spencer Strider going down is just kind of throwing everything into a bit of chaos. But I guess to close up this Hawks segment, Adam.
Oh, also, these Bulls are losing by 22 to the Heat right now.
That's funny. Yeah, the way they were walking around after the game was like they won the fucking finals.
Yep.
And we also hired a new general manager today, some guy from the Warriors.
What?
An assistant general manager to the assistant Kyle Korver. He's apparently handling other things, but clearly that the overall team structure, and I'll look up who this is so we sound like we know what the fuck we're talking about.
So we're going to edit that out?
No, we're just going to... We're not going to edit out. We're going to let people know that we are a bunch of losers. Ansi Salah, who is from Golden State. So the pedigree's there, obviously, with Golden State being as successful as they have been over the course of the last 15 years or so. So he's the VP of basketball strategy and team council with the Warriors. He's coming to the Hawks in an assistant general manager capacity.
So he probably worked under Travis Schlenk years ago.
Yeah. He apparently is very proficient with the salary cap and CBA expertise to collective bargaining agreement. So hopefully that helps. The fact that you have 3 total people as the general manager is unbelievably stupid to me.
All right.
Like, why are Landry Fields and Kyle Korver still employed at this point? Like, this is a disaster.
They've done nothing.
They made it worse.
I don't know if they have any power.
Or a wrestler's kid or whatever, man. Like, I'm really over... I'm over it. I'm over this front office. So, they have ruined what was turning into a good team. They destroyed it.
Yeah. So I think what you do, Graham, to answer your initial question is, whichever one of Trey or DeJounte will net you the most first round picks. Do that. Because after this year,
we got none until 2028 or something, right? Yeah. It's insane.
So, yeah, we got to, although when's the last time we did anything with a first round pick anyways? So
Jalen Johnson. He's a good player, but you struck out on a, like, Okongwu's good, but he's not sixth overall. DeAndre Hunter sucks ass, and he was fourth overall.
Right.
Clearly doesn't love basketball.
So I guess you do that. I mean, you can probably get something for Bogey. It's tear it down time. This is ugly. And, like, if you're not going to spend, like, ever since Tony Ressler came in, we have not been, we've never hit the luxury tax. We've never been in the top 15 in payroll.
Yeah. I think we were kind of close to luxury tax this year, but the fact that we are is even more pathetic, that this is the result of almost being in the luxury tax. And the fact that we're not even top 15, he doesn't give a fuck,
if,
I feel like.
If they run it back,
it's idiotic.
Yeah. I'm not Mr. Team on this one.
They were banking on Quinn Snyder fixing the trade to Jonte sort of not coming together, right? They were banking on Quinn Snyder's going to figure this out. Quinn Snyder's a genius. Quinn Snyder. Quinn Snyder looks like, you know how most presidents, when they get in their second term, if they get a second term, they're like, they look a lot older than they did during their first term.
Yeah.
Quinn Snyder looks like he is in year 7 of 8 in his presidency, and he's only been there for a year and a half. He looks stressed out, tired, depressed, and ashamed.
Maybe that's what you do. Instead of this 3-GM thing, give him the power.
Yeah, let him. Like, you can't do any worse than these. Normally, I'm not for the coach having the GM power, but these GMs, and I don't know anything about the guy we just hired, but Korver, who I love to death as a player, and Landry Fields are morons, and they have sunk this franchise into oblivion.
They seem like a bunch of interns.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. They've made the team worse since they've taken over. Since Schlenk is gone, the team has gone absolutely belly up.
Yeah. Yeah. Give the power to Quinn. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I know Ressler probably listens to this podcast as well.
He's dialed in every week.
Along with Arthur Blank. Did you know Arthur Blank has a hospital? Like that new Emory Hospital by where we grew up, it says Arthur M. Blank
Hospital.
He's a
great philanthropist. Can't take that away from him.
Just a terrible football.
He's just been a terrible football owner for the last 7 years.
What if he was able to build that hospital for children because of the Falcons?
Then that's fine. That's great. Where's my winning football team?
Well, we'll discuss. Are we discussing that this week? This leads us into the draft eventually.
Yeah.
But
So before we get in the draft, anything else on the Hawks? So you say build around one of them. If you had a gun to your head, who you're picking? Or do you take the nuclear option and say get rid of both of them?
Honestly, I'm tired of Trey, I think.
Even after all he's done, and he's still a great player, you're done with Trey.
I think he's regressed from what he was a couple years ago.
I think he's had a better season overall this year than he did last year, and the numbers bear that out as well. He had a career-high 10.8 assists per game this year. And I think even with all the time he missed, he was still like 8th in the NBA in assists this season. So I don't think he's regressed as a player. I think maybe your perception of him as the team leader, the guy you built around, has regressed because we are where we are. That would be my assertion.
Well, yeah, that's very great. You know I'm a gut guy, Graham. I'm going with my gut on this one. It's DeJounte. It's time to move on to a new era. I don't even know if it's the DeJounte era. Maybe it's the Jalen Johnson era as the leader of the team.
I mean, DeJounte is definitely more of a leader than Jalen, just from a veteran standpoint, I would say.
But it's like, you know, we've got a couple pieces still. What's your gut telling you, Graham?
My gut says get rid of everybody except Jalen Johnson. You build around Jalen Johnson.
You get rid of DeJounte and Trey. Mm-hmm.
You kind of go into the shit a little bit.
You're ready for a 12-win season.
Yeah, I'm ready to be like the Pistons of this year. Because I don't think the biggest problem I have is with DeJounte's extension he signed. You got him and Jalen, and maybe you keep like Bufkin and a couple other of those guys who are, you know, smaller potatoes.
AJ Griffin.
Okongwu, perhaps.
That'd be fun.
Could be fun. But what you really need to do, the problem is if you do that, you lose both your star caliber players, and you're not bringing anyone here for a long time. So it's like you better be willing to bite the bullet and accept that you're going to suck for 3 to 4 years or longer.
But
And so if you don't do that, then I would say I'm kind of on keep DeJounte.
Okay.
Just because of he's a better all-around player, in my opinion. Trey might be is a much better passer. I think he's a better three-point shooter. He's a better three-point shooter this year than he was last year. But in terms of leadership, you saw what happened the other night against Chicago. You can't just boil it down to just that. But when Trey went out of that game at the end of the second quarter, the Hawks go on like a 14-0 run with DeJounte running point. They play better with DeJounte. DeJounte brings something out in them that isn't lackadaisical in defense, as opposed to when Trey's on the court, where it just seems like everything just doesn't quite coalesce the way it should.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. I'm either nuclear option or DeJounte.
Okay. So we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. And I, Graham, I actually had a dream the other night where...
And this is after the game.
After the Hawks game. I was an Uber driver. And I picked up Trey.
Where'd you pick Trey up at?
I think it was like downtown somewhere.
Probably outside of State Farm.
Yeah.
He's standing by the Dominique statue looking at it.
Yeah. Picked up. I said, are you Trey? He says, Adam. I said, yeah, get in. So I drove him to his house, which was a very humble apartment, like in some like, seemed like it was maybe old Fourth Ward is the vibes I got from it, but just like, not as nice as a place as you would think Trae Young would stay.
Maybe and, the anthem on Ashley connected to Big Game Bar and Grill.
Sure, that could be it. Graham. Yeah. But I was like initially talking to him in the car, and he just didn't seem to care about the loss that they just had.
Mm.
And then for some reason, he invited me up to his apartment.
Things got weird.
They didn't get weird, but he just like never seemed to care about his season being over. So I'm interpreting that as Trae has played his last game with the Hawks.
That's interesting. Or maybe you're ready for him to have played his last game in the Hawks. Who knows what will actually happen?
I'm pretty sure I have the power here.
Yeah.
And my dream means that.
Got it. Yeah.
Or I just have a sense.
So I want to ask our special guest, season ticket holder, Alexa, what she wants to do with the Hawks, who just joined us.
I would like to go with Murray just based on what I've seen over the season. I think he really drives the team and the energy he brings and everything he's able to do. Like when we, who do we play that we had that comeback, that big comeback, the Celtics?
Yeah,
the
Celtics.
Two, like big comeback wins, and he was just, I feel like he just goes and like balls out all the time. Like he's not complaining to the referees. He's not walking around on defense, not knowing where to go. Like he's in it 100% of the time with the game, on the ball.
Do you like his attitude a lot more?
I like his attitude and, I like how he plays. Like he just, I like how he holds himself. I think he holds himself better in a leadership role. And I think the guys see that and they follow it.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes them play better.
Yeah.
I think, gotta keep my boy Bruno. That's who I really care about.
I know you love Bruno. But I think that's a good, you know, I think we're all on the same page there in terms of like there's something about when when DeJounte's on the court where it's just everybody's game gets raised a level, and there's a lot to be said when he was leading the team largely without Jalen Johnson. There were times when Capella was out. There were times when Bogey was out. DeJounte was the steady rock all year. And when he was just the ball dominant guy controlling everything, you know, he was getting 17, 18 rebounds, assists a game. He was dropping 25, 30 points, you know. He had multiple buzzer beating shots this year, beat Miami in February, beat Boston, and whenever it was earlier in April. There was another Orlando too. He just took over in that game when Trey was out. It's like every time Trey was out this year, DeJounte answered the call. And I like his attitude more as a leader. And I'll always go back, and I said this, I think, on the last podcast, but I will always go back to that time in the when we played Miami a couple years ago in the playoffs, and Trey was not in the huddle. This was the year before DeJounte came. And he was not in the huddle for the last, you know, play of the game. McMillan was drawing up this play, and Trey was not there. I'm like, dude. Like, I know, like, there's a maturity thing, and Trey has matured, I think, as a leader. But DeJounte is miles ahead of where Trey is right now to me as a leader of a basketball team. So
I will say I don't think this playoff game is something to really judge Trey off of, because I don't think he should have been in it. But no. Obviously he really wanted to play, or he wouldn't have been out there, because he did still have that brace, so that finger obviously wasn't fully healed. He did not look comfortable wearing that. He had terrible passes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough.
And terrible shots with that thing on. I know he took it off, I think, in the second half or the fourth quarter, and he played somewhat better, but still, it was just, he just wasn't himself.
Yeah, and the funny
part... was tough to see.
Yeah, and the funny part was, when we talked about the beginning of the segment, is, like, despite all of that, he still had 22 points and 10 assists, which just goes to show how, like, he is a special player.
Yeah, I don't dislike Trey. I just think his time as the leader of the Hawks, as the guy you're building the team around, is kind of past at this point.
Yeah.
I'd like to trade him and, like, see what we can do with that.
Yeah.
So... 3 out of 3, DeJounte.
DeJounte.
I don't like your trade everyone.
I mean,
I don't like that either.
It's not great, but I'm just saying, like,
it's pretty lame.
There's part of me that, with the dilapidation of draft picks, where you're kind of like, we gotta stock draft picks, man.
Sure, but like, trade is gonna get you a couple first round picks.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I'm saying, like, you're gonna get some back for whoever you trade. If you trade DeJounte, you
probably
trade
suck next year. So
potentially. I think, and then the biggest issue we have is this front office and this ownership group. They have, like we said earlier, not to beat a dead horse, but I'm going to beat it. They have made this team worse since we got the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep.
As long as they're in charge, we're probably fucked. That's the end of the Hawks segment. We will take a break here, hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll talk some Atlanta Braves.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan from No Credentials Required to talk to you about one of our newest partners at Belly Up Sports, SeatGeek. Yeah, live sports is great on television, but the feeling of being at the arena is a priceless experience. That's why our friends at SeatGeek are there to help you find the best tickets at the best prices. Not only can you get tickets to sporting events, but you can also get tickets to concerts, comedy shows, musicals, and more. Search for your desired event now at SeatGeek.com, enter promo code BellyUpSports at checkout, and you save $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek. Life's an event. We have the tickets.
All right, Adam and Alexa, we're back talking Braves.
Braves, Braves.
Thank God for the Braves, man. 12-5, first in the NL East, as it should be. 1.5 games over Philadelphia right now, or ahead of Philadelphia, I should say, on a 4-game winning streak, fresh off a series victory against the Miami Marlins and a series sweep over the Houston Astros, welcoming in the Texas Rangers this weekend, currently up 7-3 as of this recording on Friday night. So Braves are looking good, Adam. The offense is outstanding. Marcelo Ozuna now has a 17-game hitting streak, I think, if we're counting tonight. He's been unbelievable. Huge home run on Sunday against the Marlins. He had 2 home runs in that series, another bomb against the Astros, and collected a couple of more hits in that series. Marcel, I will readily admit, my sort of fear was just after that monster year he had after sucking for 2 years, you know, where he hit 40 home runs last year. I said, clearly he's just going to regress. I did not base that off anything. You know, normally I will look at the analytics and be like, well, this is what I think this guy will do. I was just like, well, the law of averages for no reason. You know, we'll say that he's just not going to do well this year, or he's just going to fall off. But he's leading baseball in home runs. He's kicking ass all over the place. Yeah. He is our big bear. He's having a 2020 level Ozuna season right now to start off the year.
And when he hits a bomb, it's not a wall scraper.
No, it's like 20 rows deep. I mean, he slaughters it. It's unreal.
I think it was, I'm trying to remember, it might have been like Darno or someone just describing him and how he's like, you know, his bat just like, it looks like a little toothpick in his hands. And like, because he's got such quick hands, he can just like wait longer for the ball to get to him and just like adjust more. And like, he does look like peak, like 2017, 2018,
2020,
you know, like with the Marlins first year with the Cardinals, 2020 with us. It's been awesome to see. And like, you know, he's not going to stay this hot all year.
No, of course not.
Probably not. But someone else is going to pick it up. Like, that's what this team's all about. Like, but that Marlins game, like, if we lose the series to the Marlins, things just feel
bad.
So it's like, that was 2 strikes. I think he was down 0-2.
Yeah, he was 0-2 when he hit the homer. Yeah.
And then hits a 3-run bomb to completely just turn everything around. So, I mean, he's been clutch recently.
Yeah. And he, I mean, the slash line is insane so far. Start the year. .352 average, .403 on base, .732 slugging percentage, a 1.135 OPS, and he's already worth one win this year through 17 games. I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah.
Absolutely absurd. 23 ribeyes for those that care about RBI. So Ozuna is the man. And bow down to him right now.
I mean, it's almost like you're getting into... Are we actually going to re-sign Ozuna at this
point? Well, that's what you got to think about. I mean, yeah. You think about this year as a major transitional year for the Braves overall. Max Fried's contract is up. Charlie Morton will probably retire after this year. Ozuna's contract is up. You know, Spencer Strider underwent some sort of procedure, right? So this is, and we don't know when he's going to be back exactly. I know it might be the beginning of next year. Who knows?
We'll give you a little more details than
Graham, yeah. Please. Let us know what the real story
is. So he didn't have a fully or even partially torn UCL. He had damage to the ligament that was caused by a bone fragment that he said became lodged in it. So he did not have Tommy John surgery. The surgery he had is less invasive, and the recovery is 4 to 6 months less
than traditional Tommy John surgery.
This is not Tommy John.
Not even close to Tommy John surgery.
Get Tommy John out of your head. But I'm just saying
it's with his elbow. So I associate Tommy John with that.
Dr. Graham, you've like really lost your craft.
Well, here's the thing, right? I'm a wrist and ankles guy. I'm not an elbow guy. So forgive me.
He's an appendage.
Forgive my ignorance. I'm revealing my own ignorance.
Graham edited some of this out, but like he could just not get in his brain the fact that he did not have Tommy John.
Impossible.
Even like when we explained. Graham, he didn't have Tommy John.
Impossible.
Well, yeah, no, but it's Tommy John, but it's just like a different type of Tommy John. It's Tommy John.
Tommy John.
No, yeah, so he'll it's be back for the beginning surgery. Of next There's year.
It's Elton John surgery. That's what he's getting. Either way, the point I'm making
he
is
injured.
Is that he's procedure. Injured for the rest of this year, and then when he comes back next year, you're not going to know what to expect until he consistently performs from this injury. He can blow out his damn elbow again. Who the hell knows? So what I'm trying to get back to in a circuitous manner is, yeah, maybe we should think about re-signing Ozuna with how well he's playing right now. I think you're onto something.
I think we re-sign him. I think right now Max Fried is struggling, so let's lock him in for 5 years, $32 million.
He's not taking that. He finally pitched well against the Marlins last Friday.
But then did not. Not well in his last start.
That's true. So he's definitely...
He's got like a 7-something ERA.
Yeah, it's...
It's early. It doesn't matter.
I mean, it matters, but it is early.
If it goes another month, then maybe he just doesn't like this free agency thing hanging over him.
Maybe. I mean, the thing I worry about with Max just from the last couple of years is just the health, right? I mean, the flu thing was a fluke in 22, but the... You know, he missed a vast amount of the season last year, you know, a solid 2.5-3 months. So you just wonder how the residual effects of that could be hurting him right now.
Sure. But, you know, one of the best records in the league right now. Offense is mashing, bullpen's crushing.
Yeah, this team is fine in the regular season. Like, I'm not worried about it.
We're just going to have to figure it out with the
rotation. Yeah, and I will say, like, Renato Lopez looked good.
He's looked great. Sub-1 ERA through three starts.
Yeah, like, and he's getting
quality
that
quality starts.
He's getting that fat. Like, that start against the Astros was the first time I really sat down and watched him. And you know, really tried to study his mechanics and everything. And I really liked his off-speed pitch that was breaking away from batters and right-handed batters. He was really fooling people with that. And his fastball, he could ramp it up to 97 when he needed to, but he also had good control over it. He could slow it down when he needed to. To sort of induce weak contact. I'm really impressed with him so far. Like, I think Kranitz is an underrated pitching coach. He's taken so many people and molded them, gotten them to be better than they've ever been before. I mean, that's not to say Ronaldo Lopez, you know, he could fall off a cliff. Who knows? But, I mean, just look at how great Jesse Chavez has been with the Braves in terms of where, you know, and then he goes somewhere else. He's terrible. It's just interesting watching how when we acquire different pitching talent, how he's able to sort of mold and shape them into something that is effective.
Well, it's just such a shrewd move by Anthopoulos to make the deal, tell him from the get-go, like he came to Atlanta because we said, you're going to be a starter.
Right, and of course, every pitcher wants to be a starter. No one wants to be in the bullpen.
And then they instantly locked him up for 3 more years, like $30 million.
He's performed.
Yeah, and they're doing a great job with all the starters this year and giving them a little more rest. So, like, with a guy like him who's been a reliever the last few years, you don't want to, like, put too many innings on him. So, like, when there's off days, instead of, like, bumping a guy up, they're just sticking with it. So, like,
yeah.
He's been getting, like, 5-6 days rest between each start.
Which, yeah, very smart.
Keep doing that.
Like, very smart.
We have enough. We have our Darius Fiennes. We have Elder, who still hasn't made it up to the big leagues, which is surprising. Like, A.J. Smith-Shawver. Like, we have these guys that can give you spot starts.
Was it Vines or Winans who pitched the other night in Houston?
It was Vines. He looked great.
Vines looked good. He struggled a little early on with the control. I think he had, like, 3 or 4 walks overall in the game. But he settled down and really, you know, used his changeup effectively and just gutted through 5 or 6 innings.
He's a pitcher, man.
I remember him from last year. Yeah.
Like, he hits the corners. He mixes up, like, fastball changeup a lot and just, like, keeps the hitters, you know,
yeah, off balance.
Out of sync.
Yeah, yeah.
He's impressed. So he's getting another start this weekend against the Rangers. We'll see. I think he's earned it, and let him run with it if he's gonna. If not, we got Elder ready to go.
Right. Elder's there. I know Waldrop's kind of having a tough start to this season.
Yeah, I knew his first start was bad. Has it gotten worse?
He apparently had another kind of blow up the other night, from what I heard. But, you know, this kid's so young. He had such an ascension last year. There was going to be some, you're gonna take your lumps at some point. I guess this is the time for him to do that after this sort of unparalleled success he had last season.
Yeah.
So I'm not too concerned about him. What I am concerned about long term, thinking about this team, is the rotation. That's the biggest question mark right now for me. Max has to get his game together, and hopefully that comes sooner than later. Charlie's got to keep grinding it out, giving us serviceable innings. Same with Sale. And then you look further down the rotation, you know, with guys like Vines. We recognize the senator from Montana who has his hand up.
Stop on Sale real quick.
Yeah.
So his last start, he sucked. But he went 7 innings, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's good that he went deep.
I love his sound bites as well. He's like, well, at least if I suck, at least I could suck long enough to, like, save the bullpen, is something he said after the game.
Yeah, and that's big because the bullpen's been really overtaxed to start the season. Yeah,
and tonight he ended up going 7 innings again.
3 runs.
3 runs.
That's fine.
Only 89 pitches.
That's incredibly effective.
You love that.
Yeah, like, he gave up I saw it before we came over here. Gave a home run to Simeon in the first inning and kind of just settled down after that. Like, you're not going to be perfect. No one wants perfection. We just want, you know, quality innings without, you know, giving your team a chance to win. That's really all that matters. You don't have to be a shutdown Chris Sale of 2018. Just be a little above average. That's really all we need right now.
They're just so damn good.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about the elephant in the room, Ozzie Albies. Fracturing his big toe. Who knows how long he's going to be out. That really sucks. But the offense keeps chugging along. It happened in the Houston series.
Is there a timeline on a broken toe?
He's on the 10-day IL. I think he's going to be out a little longer than that.
Sure.
I think that was just a sort of, all right, let's just put him on the injury list and just see how it goes. I don't think there's a defined timeline.
Probably a month yet. At least, right?
At least. Which sucks. But, I mean, like, I will say this. With the rash of Braves injuries, I mean, I know Strider's gone for the rest of the year, but at least with Murphy, and Albies, at least it's happening in April and not in, like, August.
Yeah.
Or September. Like, you know, when the injuries have really bitten us terribly over the last couple of years, it's like, at least these injuries are happening way at the start of the season. These guys can rehab and come back and hopefully deliver. But Yorme's been okay in the stead of Ozzie Albies
good
thus far.
Good bench players. You know, yeah.
Chadwick Tromp got a couple of big hits against the Astros the other night.
Yeah.
He drove in like 2 or 3 runs.
And then, you know, having a guy like David Fletcher to call up in the meantime.
He got the start tonight.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and that was an issue last year with the just horribly weak bench. So it comes into play.
Yeah.
So having some crafty veterans like that pays off.
Unfortunately, your boy Forrest Wall got demoted, Adam, back to AAA, for Fletcher.
It's a tragedy.
It's a tragedy.
I don't think he's played at all.
Maybe
a couple pinch run attempts.
If that.
Yeah. I'll survive.
Yeah. The Braves are looking good. Despite the injuries and the rotation kind of being up and down, overall, I'm pleased with how we're playing so far.
Alexa, what's the score of that game right now?
It's currently 8-3 in the bottom of the eighth. Michael Harris just hit a solo home run.
Nice.
Very fair.
Good to see him get going. Love also, Mike. Crazy that Acuna did not hit his first home run of the year until what? A couple days ago?
Yeah. It was Thursday during the day game.
Wow. Yep.
That's wild, man.
Yeah. My mom texted me. She's like, Acuna just went yard.
Thought he would have had a couple by now.
He started out a little slow. Like, he was still getting on base and whatnot, but he hasn't had like a busting out the gates kind of start to the season. So far, that's okay.
As long as he's healthy. I can't remember which game it was where he took the ball off the kneecap.
Oh, that was in the Houston game. He was sliding and trying to make a catch, and it hit off his – either kicked it. I think his knee got – something weird happened.
The ball hit directly on his kneecap. The
ball hit on his knee and just like caromed into left field from right field, which is crazy.
So it looked terrible.
Like it looked bad, and he was hobbling. And I was like, I was literally sitting watching the game. And normally, when I'm watching regular season games, it's so different than than it was like, 10, 15 years ago. Where I'd be like, oh my god, freaking out in like an April game. But I just went, oh fuck. Like I saw it. I think it was the same knee, where the injury happened in 21, and I was like, oh my god. But I think he's fine. But yeah, it was scary. But even then, Acuna's still hitting .294. He's striking out a little too much, but his OPS is a little lower than I like, .797. But the slugging hasn't been there. He hasn't been hitting a lot of home runs, only one home run, only four doubles so far to start the season. So he's been just getting on base mostly through just singles at this point, and 10 walks, which is pretty good through 17 games.
He's like more like a classic leadoff hitter so far. That'll turn, though.
That'll turn, yeah. I mean, we can't be worried about Acuna at this point.
But, yeah, I mean, the division's interesting. Phillies and Mets both playing good baseball.
Yeah, Philly kind of started out a little slow there, but they're, like I said at the top of the segment, they're creeping up. They're only a game and a half back. The Mets have been better than expected as well. So,
what do you think about this whole – I thought I liked the idea of, like, now we play every team in the league and, like, there's fewer division games. But yeah. I kind of miss all the division games.
I'm okay with this because I think it's a more balanced schedule. I think it kind of weeds out the weaklings a little bit because you could be in a really shitty division like the NL Central was last year.
That's fair.
And you could beat up on another team and get, you could win 100. If you were, like, the really good team, you could win 106, 7 games. But with this new format of the schedule, you got to play every team at least once.
Yeah.
Like, I know we only play the Orioles once this year, but still, it's like you got to go play the Orioles, who were the AL East champs last year. Stuff like that. I'm cool with it. I mean, I kind of miss playing, like, especially we have a good rival like Philadelphia right now. I'd like to play them 19 games a year, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Good point,
Greg. I think it's fair for the balance, the overall balance of baseball during the regular season. I think that's it. Wraps us up. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you're well. We'll see you next week. Until then, rise up for the A. Unite and conquer and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitalis.
Goodbye.
Hospitalis.
I could have talked about United, but
it's too late.
It's too late. You've already signed off.